My earliest memory would be where I'm lying down on a bed. I must have been about 2 or 3, and the wind blowing the curtains in and out of the house, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm here. Something about being here in this world.
How many of us are so self-aware that we can describe what was surrounding us when we were only 2 years old? Through the very aware eyes of Juliet Lee, who writes under the name Juliet S. Kono, we see life as it is, filled with duty, sorrow, and happiness.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is Hawaii's first weekly television program produced and broadcast in high definition.
Aloha mai kakou. I'm Leslie Wilcox. If you were born in the 1940s or earlier, you've lived through a world war, and you've seen Hawaii grow from a quiet, plantation-based society to a center of commerce. For Juliet Lee, who is also the Hawaii author and poet known as Juliet S. Kono, observations of growing up in Hilo, like the hapu'u that her mother used for growing orchids, the flying ashes of sugarcane fires, a tsunami tearing through Hilo Town, are the ones that are locked in her mind forever. And these experiences shape the story of her life.
You were a blackout baby.
Right.
And you've written about it. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
I was born during the war, during the blackout, so we were called blackout babies. That was in 1943. And my mom, you know, went to the hospital, Matayoshi Hospital. I was born in Matayoshi Hospital. And so I wrote a poem about being a blackout baby. Yeah.
And that means the windows were pinned with the...
All the windows were painted, I think.
Oh, painted.
Yeah.
And then there were gas masks hanging on the walls that you said looked like insects.
And the light bulbs were all painted black with just the bottom of the light bulb. You know how they are pear-shaped?
Mm-hmm.
But just the bottom had this light shaft that would come down.
So everybody had to go to bed early because lights off.
Right.
And I think you talked about looking at the ceiling and watching shadows dance.
Right.
What happened to you when you were three?
Well, it was just before I was three, actually, and it was April Fool's Day. The tsunami came in 1946, and early in the morning, my mother was saying, "Daddy, look outside. It seems so strange with the water receding." And my father said, "Yeah, it's so strange." And they were having breakfast about 7 o'clock.
And you lived right on the edge of the water?
Water, right in front of Liliuokalani Park, the Japanese tea garden. I guess my parents didn't think anything of it until they heard people yelling and screaming, it's a tidal wave.
In those days, no public education about tsunami,
right.
No early warning.
And the wave, my father saw the wave coming in near the breakwater. So he said he's going to run down to start the car.
What kind of car?
A Model T. It was a brand new car. I think it was a Ford Model T with a rumble seat. I'm not sure, but that's the image I have. And my mother said, okay, she's going to get some of her valuables together. And she woke up my aunt, who was living with us at the time. She woke her up and gave me to my aunt to take care of. My mother grabbed my sister. But by that time, the first wave hit. We don't know what happened to our dad because the water took the house and sort of floated it, you know, and we were floating until we banged into the neighbors and a mango tree of some sort or another tree. And the house started breaking apart. So I remember, or I don't know if my mother told me this, but my grandmother said, "You young ones go, leave me." And I don't know if I remember this, but she was waving to us.
And she stayed in the breaking up house?
Up house, yeah, holding on to a post. But my aunt took me and she fell in a hole. So she was trying to lift me up. so I could breathe above the water. And somebody took me, saw me, and took me, but left her in the hold. My mother, we lost, you know, my mom, side of her and my sister. But in the meantime, my mother said she was hurt by the barbed wire left from the, after the war, because they had all the coastline with barbed wire. And so anyway, we all got out of it.
Everybody
lived.
How did you all find each other?
Well, my mother had my sister, of course, and my aunt walked out of the water. And my father, he said he went out with the car, and then he came in with the car.
And who were you with, the 2-year-old?
With a family, I remembered he took me into the bed of his truck, and my mother found me with his family. And I don't remember his name anymore. But my grandmother was found in a tree late in the afternoon. My father went to look for her. She was found in a tree. And the boy, she said, that put her on the tree, he died. Oh. He was washed away. But that's, you know, we survived. But it plunged us into deep poverty.
You lost everything.
We lost everything. Our car was like a pancake. And my mother salvaged some kimonos, and I remember her washing. You know.
Did you have money in the house, or everything was in the house?
Yeah, gone. If she salvaged something, I don't recall her, you know. They went later, they found a tansu with her kimono and things, but everything was gone. So we went to live in a rental, first with our grandparents in Kaibiki, but you know, house is so small. The plantation house was so small, so my parents found a rental in town, and that's where we lived for another, my family. My parents lived for, I think, until 1964, until they could finally build their own home.
Now, being plunged into poverty is something. But what about emotional effects?
Well, I'm sure my mother suffered from post-traumatic syndrome, but nobody knew about it then or spoke about it, because I remember her, you know, crying, washing her kimonos, crying. And I'm sure it's my father, the old Japanese style. Enough already. Stop your crying.
In your book, Anshu, the beginning is set in the Hilo area, and the rest is in Japan, but poverty is a recurring theme. And
Right. You
really write, and I really felt it as you wrote about it, just what day-by-day living was like and looking for ways to nourish yourself and
Right. Find
things and wheedle things and cajole things and buy things cheaply. Did that come from personal experience?
I think so in some ways. My parents were very frugal, and I remember my mother having vanda flowers, having my father go out to buy hapu stands so we could have a vanda patch in the back of our rental so that she could pick flowers and sell it for penny a piece. And my sister and I would collect gallons, show you gallons, and give it to a guava juice maker. And so, you know, we were for 5 cents a gallon.
And that money was important?
Yeah, it was important. And during summers, when we were old enough, we came to Dole Pineapple Company to work there. And so, yeah, we were entrepreneurial in a sense, because I remembered I wanted a pair of red shoes at one time. So I cooked a lot of cookies, and I made little packets and went around the neighborhood selling it. But then somebody told me, shame, you know, to to do this. So I stopped.
Were you hungry at times?
Oh, no, no, not, oh,
not that,
never.
Not that hungry?
No.
Not that
Yeah,
my parents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, as far, you know, my father worked and my mother worked.
And what did your mom and dad do?
Well, my father was a service station attendant and my mother was a baker one at Waikawaena School.
As so a cafeteria worker?
Yeah, so she had a state job.
And yeah. Meanwhile, you would spend some holidays with your grandparents in Kaiviki, big right. room to play in. Right. They had a small plantation acreage, right?
Right. They had, they were, what do you call it, plantation cane growers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were, they leased land from the plantation, from Hilo Sugar Mill, I think. And it was wonderful there. We could run around and nobody told us anything. We played in the cane fields and we played in the streams and we caught crayfish and, you know, it was idyllic there.
Were there the seeds of a writer in you back then?
The first time I wrote was in third grade and I wrote a story, a Halloween story about my mother wearing a white robe and it was Halloween and I bumped into her late at night and, you know, I was very scared and I screamed and carried on and tried to make the story very dramatic. And my sister said later when she read the story, she said, you know, you shouldn't lie or you shouldn't, you know, that's not the way it was. And she was my first critic.
And you'd taken poetic license. You'd
yes, made it and I made it dramatic. And I don't know if she remembers it, but I remember her saying, you know, that's not the way it happened.
There would be another visit from a tsunami, and that too would affect you. 1960, you were a teenager then.
Right, I was a teenager, and I remember being sort of borderline juvenile delinquent, I suppose. So we were out late that night with a bunch of boys that I knew and a couple of girls. But then we had heard about the tsunami warning, so we said, oh, I think we all better go home. And, you know, we didn't know what time it was going to be. They said it was about midnight, so we waited. And all of a sudden we heard this great, tremendous, you know, noise coming in. And the water came right up to the street where we lived on Kilauea Avenue. And below that, everything was, you know, rubble. And people were screaming and coming out of the water. And next day I learned that a friend of mine, one of the boys that we hung around with, Clarence Imada, had died.
In her present life, Juliet Lee is an ordained Buddhist minister, as well as Juliet S. Kono, the Hawaii novelist, short story writer, and poet. Her Buddhist perspective is that life on this earth is full of pain and suffering. Still, she's often heard laughing. She has learned to find happiness every day and to approach life head on without sugarcoating or smug answers. Read her work and you'll feel her candor. And when you ask her about her teenage years, she recalls she ran away from home, smoked too many cigarettes, and drank a little too much, causing her parents much concern.
Oh yeah, they were so worried, I think. And, you know, they were distressed. They were very, very unhappy.
And your attitude about it was?
I didn't know what I wanted to be or do or, you know, so I just did the best I could and tried to, I really needed to grow up, I suppose.
When did you leave Hilo? You've been a Honolulu resident for a long time now.
Right, I left home when I graduated high school.
Hilo High.
Hilo High. And then I came to the University of Hawaii and tried and failed and tried and failed over and over again.
Why? Why do you think you failed?
I got married. I got pregnant and I got married. And even before that, I don't think I was motivated, or I didn't know what, you know, how to be a good student. And so I didn't try. And I got married, I had my children, I didn't go to school for a long time. And then I started going back, but then I decided we needed, you know, I needed a job. So I went to work for the police department for many years.
What did you do there?
I was a police radio dispatcher.
You were, so that required quick thinking and good directions?
Right, right.
Kind of being in the thick of things?
Right.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but then I also felt there were times that were very difficult when children got hurt or people got hurt or things happened, and you know, there's a lot of things that you're privy to, and you wonder, oh, you know, how do things happen? Yeah. At the end, there were times when we had some scary things happen. And that's where I met my husband, too.
At the police department?
At the police department.
Was he a policeman?
Oh, no. He was a police radio dispatcher.
You grew up so tied to your Nisei parents.
Yeah.
And your Issei grandparents.
Right.
And your Buddhism has been a continuing thread through your life. Mm-hmm. But you have an interracial marriage. That's where you didn't go Japanese. No. Tell me about that.
Well, my first husband was Japanese. And he carried a lot of the old Japanese style. You know, the man is the head of the family kind of thing. And I don't know, it wasn't that I said to myself, oh, I'm going to get married to somebody of a different race or anything. It just happened that, you know, we fell in love, and so it was just that. And it just happened that he was Holly.
And were there was there any dissonance along the way with your family or with you?
No. My parents, you know, accepted him right away. They liked him very much. And he's very easygoing, so, yeah.
And were you accepted by his family?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. His mother said, yeah, you know, welcome into the home and everything.
Imagine working an overnight shift as a police dispatcher, waiting to send police officers to a robbery or a domestic argument or a murder. Great inspiration for a writer. For Juliet Lee, better known as author Juliet S. Kono, the motivation to write came out of just trying to stay awake.
During night shift, it was very, you know, we tried to stay awake because otherwise our heads would be, you know, nodding, and you shouldn't do that. And sometimes we have this red mark on the top of our heads. So anyway, I started writing, reading a lot and writing, and I created my first manuscript at that time. And then I thought, you know, I really don't know much about the world, so I think I better go to school. So that's when I went back to school. I mean, I wanted to go back to school, and motivated. I was a non-traditional student when I went back, one of the first few non-traditional students.
And so this time it took.
Yeah. And I graduated with my son. Yeah. In for my BA. And then I went on to get my master's.
Seems to me you've learned an awful lot apart from school, because of so many things have happened in your life and which you've written about and shared with others.
Right.
And you have this ability to be very honest, and not in ways that show what is, as opposed to worrying about how it makes you look, how it makes the other person look. You just, it's as if you accept and you lay it out there.
Right. I have a philosophy. I guess it's kind of a Buddhist background. that says you are what you are, you can't hide anything. That's you. And I guess people say, oh, wow, you know, you don't feel uncomfortable with it, you know, what you're saying sometimes. And say, no, I don't think so, not anymore. Maybe when we were younger, I thought, you know, oh, I'm not going to say this because it's too shameful. But, you know, it's part of living. Everybody goes through all kinds of things. So I don't think I'm any different from anybody else.
It's very human. But on the other hand, I'm sure a lot of people haven't heard it expressed. For mm-hmm. example, when you speak of caring for your mother-in-law and the how aggravating it could be, mm-hmm. how she would shoot the grateful looks to your husband, yeah. but for you, she had no aloha, but you right. were bathing her and taking care of her, and, right. and she wanted to be the kind of the queen of the house when...
Right, she was the queen bee.
and you said sometimes it got ludicrous, this sort of competition,
yes.
but on the other hand, it was a real part of the day, and who would make the first stand in the day?
Yeah, I wrote about her, in tsunami years, I wrote about her, and I wrote about my mother's depression, and then later I wrote about my son's death. So that book has these three areas that, you know, I talk about, and people say, "Oh, aren't you afraid of talking about your son, you know, in this manner?" And I said, "No." He had a drug problem, and he had a mental problem, and so, you know, 10 years after he was put into Kaneohe, 10 years later he had died. So I mean, you know, people say, "Oh, I'm sorry," but there's nothing really to be really sorry about. That was his life, and you know.
But
kind of accepted.
Have you self-edited, self-censored?
Lois Ann Yamanaka always talked about the kernel of truth. There's some kernel of truth in writing, and we take this kernel and we explode it, and you know, fictionalize a lot of things and make it different in a way that, yeah, it's not really, really. Sometimes the way it happened, we do kind of verbal acrobatics to make it better. this is what my mother said when she first read Hilo Rains, and she was afraid. She said, "Oh, you know, what are you saying in these poems?" And she read it and she said, "You know, it sounds better. Our lives sound better."
For most writers, the characters, words, and emotions come from within. They pull moments and memories from their lives to form their stories. As a writer, Juliet S. Kono, known in her personal life as Juliet Lee, dips into that well of her life, composing words that can at times provide meaning and comfort to our lives.
You wrote an entire book called Anshu, Dark Sorrow, and Tsunami
Years
was all about tragic events and,
right,
and lives.
Right.
So you've spent a lot of time thinking about sorrow and sadness.
Sadness, yeah, and sorrow. People say, "Oh, you usually, you know, very happy every day," and yet, you know, how come where does that all come from? And I said, "I don't know, it's just, you know, what I think about a lot, because things are so random sometimes, you don't, you know, you have to really try to understand these things."
There's a passage in your book, Anshu, which I would love if you would read to us.
Okay.
It seems to me it's the question we all ask ourselves at times of pain and distress, mm-hmm. and deep disappointment. And in this case, a mother has lost her baby.
Right.
to radiation sickness mm-hmm. after the Hiroshima bombing, and she asks her Buddhist priest, why did this happen? Mm-hmm. And here's what you wrote.
Okay. Why did this happen? I asked, looking up at him. No one knows. There are no answers to death, the hearts of men, the will of countries, the way of the world. We can only accept things as they are in a tragedy like this. But what happened to us, to Sumie, everyone, is difficult for me to accept. Aren't you the least bit angry? I understand the anger, but anger carries with it a different kind of destruction. It will eat at your heart if you give in to it, to no avail. It will only leave you unhappy and troubled. I guess I don't understand anything.
So. And to say that is a lot better than a pat answer, isn't it? About,
yeah.
You know, you hear a lot of things said to try to relieve distress. For example, this is a mother who lost her child. Yeah. Don't worry, you'll have another one.
I mean,
there are some answers that simply are not, that overstretch and
right.
are, take you into a deeper place.
Right. It's hard for parents, you know, to explain to children why tragedy happens and why things are so random sometimes, and it has no real meaning to things that happen. I don't know how people, you know, get through things sometimes, but we're humans, and with time and everything, all things can be overcome to me.
This Hilo girl grew up to be a Honolulu-based writer who commands words with power and delicacy. Under the name Juliet S. Kono, she wrote the award-winning novel Anshu, Dark Sorrow, also poetry books Hilo Rains and Tsunami Years, and she's published short stories. She also is a wife and Buddhist priest, Juliet Lee, who looks at life unflinchingly while striving for happiness. For PBS Hawaii and Long Story Short, I'm Leslie Wilcox. Aloha ahui ho.